Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program, broadcasting to you today live from the Greenbrier in White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia. Some of you recognize the name of this place from American history. Going all the way back to the Revolutionary era, it was considered a spa, a place by its rejuvenating waters that attracted persons needing the cure. In the 20th century, it became a major resort, and many of you are familiar with PGA events and other things that have been held here. I find it most fascinating to look at some of the history of this facility, given America's role in the 20th century. For instance, right after World War II began, one of the tasks that the American government had was interning and keeping custody of all of the diplomatic officials of the combatant nations. And so Italian, Japanese, German, and other Axis powers, diplomatic personnel were brought here and were kept here until they could do trades during the early years of World War II after America's entry in order to get our diplomats out of those countries and these diplomats home. Very interesting to imagine what this place must have been like as it was teeming with all of these diplomatic personnel and their families from various nations with which America was then at war. But, of course, the most interesting thing about the Greenbrier here is that this was the top secret place where members of Congress were to be brought in event of nuclear war. Just a few moments ago, I was crawling around the bunker, and it is a bunker. It is a massive facility in which there was a bunk for every single member of Congress, every representative, every senator, and there were also other provisions made for them so that they could actually operate as Congress here buried in this mountain in West Virginia in the event that a nuclear war was precipitated. Now, it's also very interesting to know that this is one of the best-kept secrets of the Cold War. It is amazing that this facility was built between 1959 and 1962, this special bunker, and that for 30 years and more, it was kept a top-secret facility. The people that worked here, by and large, did not know it was there, and it was not known to the public, and it was hidden behind a false wall, a huge false wall, behind which there was a giant bunker door. It looks like a safe door, but about the size of a small building. And I'm just amazed that with all of the leaks that take place in American security and intelligence, that this did not get leaked. And now you can come to the Greenbrier, which is one of America's leading places for meetings and a beautiful, beautiful resort with golf and all the rest. But you can come here and really get reconnected to a part of America's history, a part that we're glad is now over. You know, there is not much nostalgia about the Cold War. It was a time in which you had the two world powers in particular, the Soviet Union and the U.S., standing on the threshold of a nuclear attack and mutually assured annihilation, what was then called the Doctrine of Mutually Assured Destruction, at virtually any time. We all breathe just a little easier now that the Soviet Union is no more, and this monument is a testimony, that this bunker is itself a testimony to just how serious a time that was and just how serious a threat the Soviet Union was and just how serious a horror a nuclear exchange would be. One of the interesting questions that is not answered is there any similar facility available now, post-9/11? Is there any similar provision for Congress to gather together in the event of a massive terrorist attack or something like that? It's probably something we just don't know. And it's one of those things that that tends to be in the circular catch-22 reason of national intelligence, and that is, if they told us, it wouldn't be a secret anymore. And so we just have to presume that someone out there is doing the right thing and taking care of what would happen if this government found itself unable to meet in Washington, D.C. There are all kinds of issues in the news, and none more pressing, of course, than some of the moral issues. And for me, last night was an interesting experience, once again, being on Larry King Live. At 9 o'clock last night on CNN, we had a debate over the issue of homosexuals in the ministry. In particular, the precipitating issue was the debate in the Episcopal Church USA over whether or not they will continue ordaining, electing, and consecrating openly homosexual persons as bishops of the church. Now, as you would well expect, you have to go down a long road before you can have an open debate on that issue. But not only is it an open debate, it looks like the church is about to reject the Windsor Report. that was brought by moderates in the church. I think it was a fatally flawed report from the beginning, but it looks like the Episcopal Church USA is going to reject the provisions of the Windsor Report. And as the Bishop of Pittsburgh, Bishop Robert Duncan, now says, it looks like the church is headed for a schism. I want you just to get a little bit of the flavor of the conversation we had last night. And there were some arguments I didn't get to answer on the air. Boy, did I want to. This was one of them. I want you to listen to Reverend Joe Hudson, who's pastor of the Cathedral of Hope. That's a homosexual congregation in Dallas, Texas. She herself is a clergy person of the United Church of Christ. Let's listen to Reverend Joe Hudson. Folks, that's clip three.
Reverend Mola, how could something be a sin if you didn't choose it?
Well, actually, that's just something I can't accept in the sense of choosing. Larry, I have to say, first of all, we're choosing all the time. Even in the moments we spend together here, we're making moral choices. I do understand that there are some choices that we make that seem to be prior to anything we can even understand. And I understand there are many homosexuals who say, I don't even have any impression of having chosen this erotic interest, this sexual orientation. I accept that at face value, but that does not mean that it then normalizes and makes acceptable homosexual acts. I want to help them through that struggle, regardless of how it came into their lives. Okay, that was not Reverend Joe Hudson. That was me, and I do not disagree with myself. I stand by that comment. And what I was responding to there was Mr. King when he asked me the question, you know, when does this choosing take place? And I think we as evangelical Christians, informed by Scripture, we have to say to ourselves and to others, we have to speak to homosexuals honestly and say, we know that when it comes to our sin nature, there are things we don't remember choosing. There are things we do not have any consciousness of having chosen. That does not mean that they are then morally right. And that is the key jump of logic that we simply cannot make. I do want to get back to the clip we were talking about, Reverend Joe Hudson of the Cathedral of Hope in Dallas. This is clip number eight, guys.
My relationship is wholly and completely natural to me. It is exactly who I believe God has created me to be. And I have a wonderful, living, dynamic relationship with God. And I know in the core of my being, that the most natural way for me to be is exactly who I am.
So there we have the debate over nature. And one of the things that got debated a lot last night on Larry King Live was whether or not homosexuality is against nature. And it's very interesting that you have here Joe Hudson saying that what's natural is what's natural to her. And this gets back to, again, the utter subjectivity of all of this, the claim of personal autonomy. The Christian worldview is established in the understanding that we do not define our own reality, but rather that the Creator defines it for us. And, you know, you don't have to know a great deal about nature to understand that nature has a very consistent witness when it comes to the fact that heterosexual coupling is that which leads to procreation, which leads to the furtherance of the species, which points to the design of this capacity in the first place. Let's listen also to clip number seven.
Actually, I think it's important to note that over time, if you look at the development of Scripture, and if you look at how people have interpreted it, and how, and you can go back and look at over time the different translations from the original text, you will see that the word homosexual actually comes in to the Scripture much later. That the original Greek has to do with an act of abuse of younger people for sexual purposes, and that the word homosexual is gradually brought into Scripture that condemns a whole group of people, and that you can trace that very clearly through time as we move up into present day and how that word is finally introduced into Scripture.
Okay, a one-word response to that would be hogwash. Nonsense. That's ridiculous. Actually, knowing the Greek language would help a lot here. In 1 Corinthians chapter 6, Paul uses very specific language to reference both parties in an act of homosexual sodomy. He leaves nothing to the imagination. He is very specific. And the Scripture comprehensively, totally, universally, consistently condemns every form of same-sex sexual activity. Period. As a matter of fact, historians of the ancient world will point to Romans chapter 1 as the quintessential condemnation of lesbian behavior, that is, homosexual behavior among women, found anywhere in any culture in the ancient world. It is so clear. And, of course, also in Romans 1, the condemnation not only of male homosexual acts, but this is very important, of homosexual desire. They are both roundly condemned by the Apostle Paul. Not the only sin condemned. Actually, in 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and in Romans chapter 1, Paul gives us a catalog of sins. The point is not that homosexuality is the only sin. The point is that it is sin. And it is a sin to suggest that it is anything other than sin. Is it now politically impossible to make this argument? It's one thing to debate the issue on Larry King Live. It's another thing to have the Episcopal Church USA debating it. When we come back, we're going to be talking about a development reported in today's Washington Post from Maryland, where Maryland Governor Robert L. Ehrlich Jr. fired Robert J. Smith, an appointee to the Metro Transit Authority Board, for saying on television that he believed that homosexuality is deviant. He said as a Roman Catholic, he was just saying what the Roman Catholic Church teaches. Is it now impossible to speak while Catholic in public and hold any kind of a point of office, even for a transit authority? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll be right back. We normally would not do two shows in a row dealing with homosexuality, but there are just so many issues right now swirling about this issue. I didn't want this one to go stale on us because my interest in the story was piqued immediately when I saw this Washington Post front page story. Front page of the Washington Post. Not about a federal appointee, not about a big federal or national issue, but about Maryland. In the region around Washington, D.C., of course. So a lot of the people that work and operate in Washington live in suburban Maryland. And thus on the front page, let me just read you the headline. Metro board member fired for comment on gays. Now, you'll remember just a few weeks ago, we had on this program Mark Stern, the general counsel of the American Jewish Congress, who talked about how that religious liberty is now being curtailed, constrained, compromised by the gay rights agenda. And a lot of that discussion was somewhat hypothetical. It did touch on some very real, live, current issues, such as the fact that the Archdiocese of Boston and the Boston Catholic Charities is now out of the adoption business because they would not comply with the state requirement that they practice no discrimination between heterosexual and homosexual couples in adoption. But this is another sign that it's perhaps a bit closer than we thought. This threat is a bit more pressing, more urgent than some have thought. Let me just read you a little of the story. It's by Lena Sun and Matthew Mosk of the Washington Post. Maryland Governor Robert L. Ehrlich Jr. yesterday fired Robert J. Smith, his appointee on the Metro Transit Authority Board, for referring to gay people as sexual deviants on a cable television show. Quote, Robert Smith's comments were highly inappropriate, insensitive, and unacceptable, Ehrlich said in a statement less than 5 hours after the controversy erupted during a Metro board meeting. They are in direct conflict to my administration's commitment to inclusivity, tolerance, and opportunity. Mr. Ehrlich is running for re-election. He's the Republican governor of Maryland. By the way, he's the first Republican governor of Maryland since Spiro Agnew. And he's running as a centrist here. And as a matter of fact, the motto of his campaign, according to the Washington Post right now, is Bob Ehrlich governs not from the right or from the left, but from the center where we are. Now, this piqued my curiosity immediately because I wanted to know what this man said that got him in such hot water. And so if you finally make your way to the end of the Washington Post story, this is what you find. Smith said he was a regular panelist on the weekly political roundtable show 21 This Week, broadcast on Access Montgomery Cable Channel 21 for the past 12 years. He appears as a Republican activist, according to Rodney Bryson, the show's producer. On last weekend's show, Smith interrupted another speaker who was talking about federalism and Vice President Cheney's daughter. The speaker said Cheney's daughter, who was a lesbian, would not want the government interfering in her life, according to a recording of that portion of the show. That's fine, Smith interrupted, but that doesn't mean that government should proffer a special place of entitlement within the laws of the United States for persons of sexual deviancy. Now, one might categorize those comments as a bit impolitique. They're certainly politically incorrect. But Mr. Smith here says he was speaking not as a member of the Transit Authority about matters of mass transit, that wasn't the issue at all, but rather as a Roman Catholic about his understanding of homosexuality. The teaching of the Roman Catholic Church is that homosexuality is sexual deviancy. There's really no question about that. It's in the official teaching. It's in the magisterial teaching. It's in the catechism of the church. It teaches that it is against nature. That's what we were talking about just a little bit earlier with that clip from Larry King Live. It teaches that it is a form of deviancy and indeed is a grievous sin. This man simply said that that was the fact. And he was deposed from his role on the Metro Transit Board of Maryland by Governor Robert Ehrlich. There's a whole lot here. This is a front-page story, the Washington Post, and it's one of those front-page stories that will disappear very quickly. But let me tell you what it reminds me of. Last year, we were talking about a man in Italy who was appointed by Silvio Berlusconi, the Prime Minister of Italy, to a role in the European Parliament. He was denied that role. His name was Rocco Rutigliani. And he was denied that role because he, as a Roman Catholic, a conservative Roman Catholic, has stated that he believed that homosexuality was sexual deviance. He was forbidden his seat. He was never allowed to take his role in the European Parliament. And so immediately there in Western Europe, there dawned the awareness that if you are a conservative Catholic who holds the conservative Catholic teaching, you can't serve in the European Parliament if you're going to be open and vocal about your Catholicism. Now, I want to ask you the question, where is religious liberty? You see, I didn't want this issue to be left to Catholic commentators today. I did not want this to be left to those who would speak up for Mr. Smith's Catholicism. I am not a Roman Catholic. As people well know, I am an evangelical Protestant who has serious concerns and opposition to teachings of the Roman Catholic Church. But this is a religious liberty issue. And this is a religious liberty issue that hits very close to where we live, because this is an issue on which evangelical Christians rooted in Scripture and the Roman Catholic Church have a common conviction about the deviance and the sinfulness of homosexuality. If this can be done to this man as a conservative Catholic, it can just as easily be done to another as a conservative evangelical. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Is it now out of bounds for any public official to say that he or she believes that homosexuality is sexually deviant? If this is so, what does that say about religious liberty in the year 2006 in the United States of America? It looks like it is so. After all, this was a Republican governor in the state of Maryland who immediately removed this man from office 5 hours after controversy erupted. You talk about a break glass in case of emergency political crisis here. He did this 5 hours after controversy erupted, removed the man from office, and again, just to read his own words, he said Robert Smith's comments were highly inappropriate, insensitive, and unacceptable, and this is the last part. They are in direct conflict to my administration's commitment to inclusivity, tolerance, and opportunity. To me, this is a scary equation. A very scary warning about where we are. And it is a very clear sign, I think, of how the opening of religious liberty is closing in this country just over the one issue of homosexuality. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'd love for you to join the conversation. Is it now out of bounds? Is it now politically impossible? Not only politically incorrect, but politically impossible for any political official to say he believes that homosexuality is sinful. This is really interesting, isn't it? Because I can tell you, as the noose tightens on this question, you're going to have all kinds of Catholic politicians running for office who are going to be asked if they agree with the teachings of their church. Just like you had Bill Pryor, the former Attorney General of Alabama, grilled by members of the Senate Judiciary Committee as to whether, as a Roman Catholic, he really believed this, and if so, how he could possibly operate as a federal judge believing that homosexuality is a sin. We are living in strange times. We need to talk about it. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Again, this is the Albert Mueller Program. We're broadcasting from the Greenbrier in White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia. It is a place that is just a few hours' drive from Washington, D.C., but I was amazed today. In the newsstand, every single paper from the region was there. The Washington Post, the Washington Times, of course, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and an entire collection of regional papers from Beckley, West Virginia, Charleston, West Virginia, Roanoke, Virginia. You know, almost every one of them, to a paper, had some story on the issue of homosexuality in the front section. That's just how pervasive this issue now is. There isn't an area of our lives or of this culture that is not touched by this controversy. It has to do with employment and finance and culture and entertainment and education, politics, you name it. Is it now politically impossible, to the point of losing one's job, to say that we believe that homosexuality is a sin? How do we function as faithful Christians if we don't say what we know to be true? The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'm Albert Mohler.
Listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
You know, I believe that as Christians, we are obligated to speak the truth in the most appropriate manner. And that is sometimes difficult to discern and to determine. You know, prudence does play a part of this, but so does courage. You know, at the end of the day, we need to make certain we're saying the right thing and doing our very best to say it the right way. I'm not sure that Bob Smith, in this context, said the right thing in exactly the right way. But I am convinced that he said what, as a conservative Catholic, he believed was the only thing in consistency with the teaching of his church. And there's nothing illegal about being a Roman Catholic in this country. He had every right to say that. There may have been other words he could have used. There may have been other contexts in which he could have explained it. But the bottom line is that this man was removed by Governor Robert Ehrlich of Maryland 5 hours after controversy erupted, simply for saying on a cable television local access news program, I mean, one of those things that most people don't even watch, that as a Roman Catholic, he believed that homosexuality was a sexual deviancy. The question is now, as the noose is tightening on this in this culture, is it possible to believe this? You know, we have people working for major American companies who are told that they will not be candidates for promotion and may actually be demoted or worse if they won't get along, serve on a diversity committee that may have a very, very pro-homosexual agenda. There are all kinds of things like this going on, and it is the fact that the space in America for a reasoned discussion about the moral status of homosexuality is getting smaller and smaller. Let's go to Jeff calling from Tarpon Springs, Florida, listening on WTBN. Go ahead, Jeff.
Hi, how are you?
I'm glad to hear from you. Go
right ahead. I'm basically just calling to say that I agree in a sense that everyone has their right to their own opinion, to practice whatever religion they believe, to do whatever they feel is comfortable for themselves in their own home. When a person is in a position, politically appointed position, or a position in the public, anything to do with the government, I think that that person cannot comment or make personal opinion statements like that, for the sense that I think that opens up, you know, the homophobe to say something about homosexuals, or the racist to say something about a quote-unquote inferior race, because those are all personal opinions, just like the personal opinion he expressed on that cable show. Now, whether or not
Jeff, hang with me here, because you're making an important argument. I want to press you just a little bit to figure out. I have two thoughts in response to your argument. Number one, does this mean that we now have, as a government, only a pro-homosexual position, that's all you can have? Because that's what it looks like in Maryland.
No, I think what the key word that you mentioned before about that governor's policy is tolerance. We don't have to agree with it, but we don't also have to, in a political sense, we don't have the right to condemn it either. We have to be tolerant.
So being tolerant means we can't condemn homosexuality as something that's wrong.
No. If this gentleman is speaking at his Catholic church during a homily or some type of men's club, whatever, he can say whatever he wants, because that's his personal opinion in his private area. However, if you're a government worker, you know, there are laws that say that people can practice and do what they feel is right. I mean, there's amendments for that, and that's why we're a free country. So therefore, I bring it back up. It would almost be as if a racist person in a political position said some type of racist comment. Now, the country would be in uproar over that as well.
But I guess what you're doing then is making it equivalent. You're making someone's sexual choices and activities equivalent to a racial issue. That's a logic I can't follow, Jeff. Like I say, I'm not sure this man said what I would say under the same circumstance. I'm pretty sure that I would have put it differently. But when pressed in public or in private, I'm going to have to say the same thing about what I believe to be the moral status of homosexuality. And I would simply say, with all due respect, that taking your argument to the logical conclusion is the pure privatization of religion. That means that, that our religious faith can have no public consequence. And just think about that on the other hand. You know, the civil rights movement would have gotten nowhere without arguing that God does believe that all human beings are equal. And, you know, so I think that's a dangerous line to take, but I really appreciate your call. And by the way, I think there are a lot of people who agree with you. That's a part of what concerns me in this current context. That's why I think we have to talk about this. And Jeff made the argument that basically one should be able to hold this as a private conviction, but not as a public official. Even as a member of the Transit Authority in Maryland, which until I talked about it here, most of us probably did not know existed. But nonetheless, Jeff made another statement, though. He said he ought to be free, this man ought to be free, to make such statements in his Catholic Church. That's what I wonder, as that was going to be the second question I was going to ask him, because I'm not sure that that is going to be good enough either for a lot of people. In other words, I think what you're going to be getting in terms of the constriction on this issue, just like it happened in the Senate Judiciary Committee, is people saying, look, even if you attend a church that holds those convictions, you're simply out of bounds. We'll be right back. Yeah, that last caller, Jeff, really put some issues on the table that I think are very helpful. I disagree with him, but he was very articulate in setting forth the case that basically this kind of belief held privately is okay. But the minute it's articulated publicly by anyone who has any kind of public role, especially holding public office, it's intolerance, and it just can't be accepted. He also made the statement of the analogy that this is like racism. And that's exactly what those pushing for the homosexual agenda have wanted to happen. That's the argument they wanted to take root and take hold and gain traction. And boy, it has. Let's go to Ben, listening on WTBN, calling from Tampa. Go ahead, Ben.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. I disagree with the last caller, Jeff. I think that, you know, God realizes that we have to have government to govern us and we have rules to follow. But I think that the Bible trumps every rule of politics or whatever. You know, everybody wants to, you know, I think in politics, everybody wants to get people on their side just to get votes, no matter how they feel about something. You know, I think it was wrong for him to fire a guy for his opinion and for the truth that was spoken.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the interesting things about the governor's action here is that he did this in the name of diversity. And that's like saying, let's eliminate positions in order to be diverse. Of course, it's not about diversity. It's about ideological conformity. And it's just almost Orwellian to try to package that as diversity. Appreciate your call, Ben. Let's go to Adrian, listening on WFIA, calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Go ahead, Adrian.
How you doing, Dr. Mola?
It's a pleasure. Glad to hear from you. Go right ahead, Adrian.
It seems more and more nowadays that freedom of expression, and freedom of speech is for everybody but Christians.
It does sometimes seem that way, Adrian. And as it does, I think it's important that we be really, really careful to watch how we speak to these issues. But we also recognize we have a responsibility to speak to these issues. You know, when I was on Larry King Live last night, I really worked hard as a believing Christian to speak in a way that I believed was both faithful and compassionate. Now, yet there would be some persons who would see no compassion in what I said because they can only understand compassion in a statement that affirms people where they are in their sin. And I can't accept that equation. But there were things I didn't say. We have to avoid name-calling. And I'm not sure that sexual deviance is the best way to describe this, because actual deviance is a statistical issue. It really is. I mean, you talk about deviation from a norm. You know, just being sexually deviant you know, we could see one day, by the way, that if heterosexuality becomes as marginalized as some would, that there'd be someone who would consider that to be deviant in some cultures. But that's because we're not talking about sexuality as judged by a statistical survey, nor sexuality by a subjective evaluation. We're talking, as Christians, about what we believe the Creator to have revealed about us in our sexuality, how He, as Creator, has the sovereign right to direct us in our sexuality, and how we, as biblical Christians, are required to bear testimony to that in a way that is faithful. And we do have to really talk together as Christians about how best to do this. Missiologically, how best to do this. Culturally, linguistically, how best to do this. But when I see a man fired 5 hours after a controversy erupted, in which he said just this, he just said homosexuality is sexual deviance, and he's a member of the Transit Authority, for crying out loud. I mean, this is something that the Transit Authority doesn't even have to deal with. They deal with subways and buses, folks. They deal with fares and whether you can smoke in the transit cars or not. Not about sexuality. That tells me that the public space for a reasoned, fair, diverse, and honest discussion of homosexuality is really closing fast. Let's go to WTBN, where Charles is listening in St. Petersburg, Florida. Go ahead, Charles.
Yes, sir. How are you today? Number one, what is the governor's name, and is there a way to contact this gentleman to let him know our feelings on this?
Oh, I'm sure that you can get to him in the governor's office in Maryland. His name is Robert L. Ehrlich, the Republican governor of the state of Maryland. And you can contact him, I am sure, in the state capitol there, and I am almost positive for sure you could find a website. And I would encourage you to do that. The governor needs to hear from persons who are concerned about his constriction of religious liberty in this case. Thanks for your call. Let's go to Chris calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, Dr. Muller, thank you for taking my call. I think that it's interesting when you bring up things like people working on diversity councils in a business, and when it would violate their ethical standards. I wonder what they would say if they had to support the rights of a Hindu. Why don't Christian conservatives look at that the same way? Because a Hindu is making a choice. They're polytheistic, which is a huge sin. It's against the big top 10 list. And yet you wouldn't decry somebody for being that in that setting, and yet you feel free to decry somebody who is a homosexual who is making the same kind of choice for the same kind of sin if all sin is sin.
Okay, you lost me on that, Chris, honestly. I'm going to ask you to recover that territory just a little bit because I didn't follow. I don't understand the jump from Hinduism to homosexuality. Just help me there.
If both are sin and every sin is the same, why is it that you wouldn't also feel like you could decry a Hindu then?
Well, I would say that I believe Hinduism is a false religion, but I would also say that the Hindu has a right in the First Amendment to be a Hindu. That's something that I will fight for. That's something that's in settled law. It's not an issue in America as to whether someone has the right to be a Hindu, but I am not, by that same token, Chris, going to be in a position where I have to say the Hinduism is right. I believe the Hinduism is a false religion that leads to death. Let me be very clear about that. But I believe that the Hindu has the right to practice Hinduism. He has a right to organize a Hindu society, put together a Hindu congregation, build a Hindu building. And if you go to most of the major cities in America, you will see just that. Hindu stuff in the bookstore, they have every right to do that. But I think the parallel would be if I would suggest that that it would be impolitic to say that Hinduism is a false religion, therefore someone ought to be fired for saying it. Well, there you would have to get rid of virtually every member of Congress who is an evangelical Christian or an Orthodox Roman Catholic. I'm not making the jump with you, Chris, but I appreciate your call. Let's go very quickly to Charles calling from St. Petersburg, Florida. Go ahead, Charles.
Yes, sir. The very statement the governor made about his staff and his position was to have inclusivity and tolerance is hypocritical in the fact that he threw out this Catholic priest in his position. Unbelievably hypocritical.
Yeah, I believe the same thing. There is a deep hypocrisy in the public square when you say in the name of diversity that you're going to limit the acceptable positions. We'll be right back. Well, Sunday, of course, is Father's Day, and the origin of that holiday back in American history came at a time when fatherhood was the expected part of the landscape of the family. It's not so much the case now. There are many ironies in America's celebration of Father's Day in June of 2006. One of them is the marginalization of fatherhood in America. Also, the epidemic of fatherless children in America. You add all this together, and we are at a very interesting cultural moment. It's high time we recover admiration and respect and expectation in the role of fathers in the home. We have to start out with expecting a father to be in the home. One of the main requirements of civilization is to require men to take responsibility for their own offspring. That means you have to honor fatherhood. That means you have to expect men to live up to their responsibility as fathers. We're living in a country that increasingly has the laugh lines of its sitcoms at the imbecility of fathers. We are in a culture that increasingly denies fathers rights in a world in which divorce law has completely corrupted our understanding of what the family is all about. We live in a culture that makes it easy for men to abandon their responsibility as fathers and to go on with their lives as if they do not have responsibility for their own offspring. We have boys and girls being raised without the male influence in their lives that a father would provide. This has led to all kinds of pathologies in this culture, including fatherless boys who, by the time they reach early adolescence, are literally uncontrollable. Many others are raised in a situation in which they are treated in a way that produces young male narcissists who do not understand their responsibility to grow up as a man, take responsibility as fathers. When we celebrate Father's Day in the year 2006, let's rightly respect and honor those men who are living up to that role and responsibility as fathers. Let's recognize it for the achievement it is and for the necessity it is, not only for individual families, but for civilization itself. Also, on Father's Day 2006, let's recognize how much ground has to be recovered in this culture, in our society, in honoring, expecting, and respecting fatherhood. One of the big issues for our society today is recovering sanity in the midst of this kind of confusion. You know, these holidays can easily become opportunities to buy a greeting card and take the old man out to lunch and then drop the issue of fatherhood. Fatherhood needs to be on the front burner of our current agenda. It needs to be on the nation's agenda in such a way that we remember that we all bear a responsibility to hold up the expectation of fatherhood and to respect the role of fathers. For Christians, it goes beyond that. We understand that human fathers bear the responsibility to image for their children and to model in their homes the fatherhood of God. There could not be a higher calling than that. Fathers, live up to your calling. Christian fathers, show the glory of God in your family by leading, protecting, providing, and serving, loving, and befriending your children. We'll be back next week for Intelligent Christian Conversation. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.